When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gastroenteritis Blues. My name is Steve Lippman. I am with Dan Volpone and Emily Cannell. I have a question for both of you to start this podcast. And if you already know the answer, then you must abstain from answering it. Which member of the Sixers universe, current, past, former, who knows, put this on Twitter 2 days ago? Love is a drug, and I'm trying to overdose on you. Looks like neither of you know it.
I think I know it.
You think you saw it, or do you think you have a good guess?
I think I saw it.
Okay, well, we're going to withhold your answer. Dan, blurry background. We don't know what's going on over there. But what do you think, Dan? Who said this?
I don't know.
Like does it sound like a Maury tweet?
No, because it's not about NFTs.
Not about NFTs.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm thinking could be Korkmaz. That's my guess.
Korkmaz is your guess. The answer, Emily, is who?
I believe it's Paul Reed.
That's right. Friend of the program, nice. Paul Reed. Love is a drug, Korkmaz, and I'm trying to overdose.
In Turkish, honestly.
God knows what the fuck he's saying. He could be saying something similar.
Where are the thirst traps from? Has anyone figured it out?
I don't know, but it's got me all hot and bothered. Korkmaz posted some pictures. He's sweaty.
I've seen him on Twitter, and I don't know where they came from, but he's like a little grainy, and he's got that red, white, and blue outfit on. I don't know.
And his post, this is, of course, how we start the podcast after Ben requests a trade, but his post before that one is like just him bending down with a face, and the caption was, ugh. So I don't know what he's getting into, but he's got new money, and I hope he's spending it wisely. Before we move on, the second half of this podcast is a conversation between Emily and Dan and Brandon Lee Gowden of BGN Radio and Bleeding Green Nation. They preview the upcoming Eagles season, and I am excited to listen, and that should be a lot of fun. For the first half, we're going to talk about what happened with the Sixers this week, which was something giant, as can't underline it enough, but friend of the show, Keith Pompey, had the report. He reported that Ben Simmons let it be known that he wants out. Simmons basically met with Josh Harris, Daryl Morey, Elton Brand, Doc Rivers, and what an awkward meeting. Do you think they had lunch? I don't know what this was, but
I don't think it was in person.
No, it was. Yeah.
Then they all went to LA. I don't think Ben has come here.
No, yeah, they did. He said in a meeting with 76ers brass last week in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
And he's told, right. So this was in person. They all went out to LA. And Simmons said that he no longer wants to remain a Sixer. He said that he does not intend to report to training camp. There's a lot here, basically, that Ben just wants to get the hell out and that there's no shortage of teams interested. But the problem is, Morey is still demanding a king's ransom, all of that kind of stuff. This is a big deal. You know, I have to say that we were right about this. A lot of people were talking about just hang on to Ben until the trade deadline, trade him, things will be fine. He'll realize it's in his best interest. It was like everybody involved wants this to come to an end. And I think this is what we're seeing. So my first question is really, how big of a deal do you think this is? On one hand, we sort of knew that he wanted to be out of Philly, but a very public trade demand. And there were a bunch of reports after this. We'll get to them. But the spin has already started from Clutch and all of that. And now he's saying that he won't come to training camp. Brian Windhorst said on ESPN that he's prepared to pay a fine if he has to, if they're going to not trade him yet. Very clear that Ben wants to get the hell out, and he's now made it public. So, Yaron Weissman, another friend of the show, tweeted after this came out that talking to people close to Simmons at Summer League, the message I got was basically the Sixers have to trade him, but we're not going to force this now. We're going to let the team do its thing. It seems to me like the Sixers are taking too long with this trade demand trading Ben, and Clutch is saying, like, enough waiting around, get him out of here. He's not coming back. Dan, what is your reaction to this? I'd love to hear what you have to say.
I think it's not all that surprising, really. I mean, like Perkins said it, and, you know, I think that he's probably a guy who's in touch with Clutch a good bit.
Yeah, so, we'll have more about him later, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that he had a fun week, too. But, yeah. It was kind of something where you could see it coming with people who are connected kind of suggesting it. And we knew. I don't think anyone was kidding themselves that the meeting with Ben at the beginning of the summer was Ben saying he wants to be back. And that, or, well, the meeting with Rich Paul was Rich Paul saying Ben wants to be back because Ben wasn't even there. Or that all of the, you know, whispers going around about Ben not being in touch with the team, if you believe that those are all just BS and that people are just making this up, like, you're ridiculous. We've seen this happen. There's patterns of this. Guys have done this before. Ben is not the first guy to ask for a trade. This is what asking for a trade looks like. He didn't come out. He didn't post on Instagram, trade me. This is what it looks like. And, you know, if it weren't for hearing it ahead of time, I would have been a little surprised that, you know, he's holding out from training camp, because I don't think that's very usual. I mean, even Harden showed up. I know I'm not surprised. I've kind of expected this to happen. And I don't even think it matters that much, because they were going to trade him before. They're going to trade him before training camp anyway. They should have traded him before Clutch made it public that, you know, wasn't going to show up.
Yeah,
a little bit, but other teams probably had an idea of this anyway. Like, other teams probably knew that Ben wasn't going to show up, or at least thought there was a good chance of it. And, you know, I think Ben's value is what it is regardless, which is that, like, some teams are really going to want to take a shot on him, but no teams are going to rush and give everything for him because he's just not that good. But there's teams that'll be like, for the right price, we'll try to fix him. You know, well, we like what he is and we think we can make him better. Fix is maybe a strong word, but, like, he's the 25th to 30th best player in the league, and he's going to go for that kind of value. And he always was. Like, the teams aren't going to, I don't think this is changing that much.
So, I would say that what it makes harder is the bluff from the Sixers that they had been putting out in the media that they're happy to hold them until they,
which, you know, was an awful bluff.
It was a bluff, but now it's like, well, you're really not going to do that, because when guys want to get traded, generally they get traded, unless you're Furkan Korkmaz, and, you know, that turned out good for him. Emily, what was your reaction to this? And, like, as a fan, were you mad about it? Like, for me, I was sort of excited about it because I just want him off the team. So, like, this will help him get off the team. Now, there's a larger conversation to be had about him, like, how he reacts to criticism or what I honestly have more of a problem with is the spin as he's leaving town, which I think is insane. But what was your reaction when you saw this report from Keith?
Yeah, I just thought it was, like, exciting. I was like, good, we're finally going to get some movement on this. And then in my mind, because I'm a weirdo and think about weird things, I was like, how did, like, you said the meeting was in person. And I'm like, well, how did they all get out to LA? Like, did Ben call them and be like, hey, I have something to tell you guys. You all have right. to come here. And then he was like, huh, I need out. Or, like, did they know they were going to hear him in person say he needed out? Because they don't all live in LA. An email? So, yeah, like, this meeting could have been an email. Like, literally. Like, Daryl lives here. I'm pretty sure Doc Rivers lives in, like, Texas most of the year. Like, they don't live there. So it was, like, a hassle for everyone to get there, for him to be like, I don't want to play for you. That seems imagine, right, honestly.
I imagine Elton Brand in, like, the Dallas airport for a layover on his way from Philly to LA, and he's like in line at an Annie Ann's, and it's all to just go to LA for Ben to say, I no longer want to be on the team. It's great.
Yeah. So like, that's honestly like what I like thought about, like the logistics of it. Cause that's why I thought it was like a Zoom meeting. Cause I was like, this is ridiculous, but now it's even more ridiculous. It's very rude one by Ben. I hope he like put them up in his new $18 gazillion mansion.
There had been, Dan, you like alluded to this, like there had been only signs of everybody wanting to move on this entire summer, ever since the season ended the way it did. Like Sixers are trying to trade him to everybody, canvassing the league. And, you know, Ben's agent is in step with this, like, you know, then the day that this happened, hours before, Danny Green was on, I think, Howard Beck's podcast, and he was just, I've never seen anything like this. But it was Danny talking about like, well, we don't know what we're going to get for Ben yet. So we could get another point guard or we could get another wing. And it's like, you're a player on the team. Like, it was shocking.
He kept saying like, was, and like using the past tense, like Ben had died. He was like, he was this.
He was like, Ben was a great defender this year. We thought he should have been defensive player of the year. Now I'm going to be the best defender. It's like, it was just very strange to see him talking. So now he says kind of whacked out shit a lot. So that might not mean anything, but I just thought it was wild that that this was, you know, talked about so openly that very day. So after this, Keith drops that report, Ben wants out. Meanwhile, I haven't seen anybody questioning Keith's report, but like, that's obviously real. Like, it would be one text request to say like, no, Ben loves Philadelphia, we're happy to be in Philadelphia. Like, this was very clearly Clutch leaking things, and Keith did a great job reporting.
Well, and to Keith's defense, which I think that people who maybe don't follow the news as closely want to be like, oh, like, they, you know, Keith might not have the, like, no, Keith is right. Like, we've had Keith on. Keith has told us what it takes for him to put out a report, which is, you know, confirming with like two or three or four people in the organization, as opposed to there are people who are like, oh, these are your rumor guys. Like, there's like a 25% chance this is true, but it's a lot of fun.
Right.
Like, Keith is not one of those guys. When Keith puts it out, he is confirmed.
Yeah. And especially a report like this, which holds a lot more weight than some of the like breadcrumbs that we've been seeing. Like, this is a big deal, reporting on this meeting that very clearly took place. So Jason Dumas, after this came out, said, source, there's a high chance that Tyrese Maxey will be a part of any Ben Simmons trade. Rich Paul would like both of his clients out of Philadelphia. A few local Philadelphia-based organizations had planned on partnering with Maxey on some community events. They were told to cancel those plans. Paul would not like Maxey to grow roots in Philly if he could be gone. So this is like malpractice. This is real from Clutch, because it was like Maxey just finished his rookie year. He's about to like play 30 minutes a game on a really good team with a superstar. He also doesn't particularly fit with Ben. So like, just tying him to Ben wherever they go is not a great idea. So that seemed weird. The next day, as you mentioned, Perkins, Kendrick Perkins said the Tyrese Maxey news is false. Rich Paul never said he wanted him out of Philly, but if he's involved in the trade because of his value, now that's another story. And then Dumas walked his report back. Update, Tyrese Maxey is excited about this upcoming year with the Sixers, as is Rich Paul and the 76ers. Paul does not want Tyrese out of Philly. However, the Ben Simmons situation is totally separate. Do we think that this report was wrong and made up in the moment or whatever? Or do we think that Rich Paul or somebody at Clutch told this to Dumas, who then put it out there, and they were like, yeah, actually not a good idea. Like, this isn't going to work out. Emily, what do you think?
I kind of think it's the second one, because the whole part about the community organizations is so out of left field. Like, who would make that part? And that it, like, if that got leaked and everyone was like, oh, well, like, that's really shitty to be like, don't work with organizations that help people in Philadelphia because we don't want him to be there. And they were like, oh yeah, they're right, that's bad optics. So I don't know if it's leaked and walked back, but still true, or
yeah.
leaked and went walked back and actually walked back. But I do agree with you. It's not good agenting. Like, Maxie's poised to have a real role on this good basketball team this upcoming year.
And it's totally unprecedented. I mean, Maxie was a pick in the 20s who just had a rookie year where he started maybe five games. Like, it's not like he's this, you know, everybody loves his potential. Yeah. So, you know, so Dan, what do you think? What's your, where do you lean in terms of that report from Jason Doomba?
No, I don't think he made it up, but I think Clutch did him kind of dirty. Like, so they give him this information. Right. I think that, I don't think he's making it like anything up. Like, I don't, like, I wouldn't, obviously I was saying earlier, Keith has confirmed things with like multiple people. It's like, he's reporting this just like back, he checked it from angles, right? Like, but the other opposite of that, or maybe that is the opposite, but the other side of that isn't necessarily just making something up, right? Like, you can get a report from one angle and put it out. It's not BS. Mm-hmm. There's just a higher chance that it's not really going to come out that way and that you're kind of getting used from one side or the other. I think that he got information from Clutch. The community organization thing is like kind of a weird thing for Clutch to even say, because it's an awful look for them. I don't know how it could be anything but an awful look for them to be like, don't help out in the community.
Right.
And then I think that, I don't even know if it was an optics thing where it's like fans are like, this is awful. Like, you guys
right.
suck. Like, if you're Maxie and your agent is putting this out about you for a situation that you're probably happy in and you have no drama in, like, it's not, that's not your drama. That's Ben's drama. That's Clutch's drama. But why would he want to get involved in that? That's not his fight. And they're using him as like a bargaining chip in this fight, I'd be pretty pissed, right?
Right.
I think there's a good chance that Maxie said, you know, this is, you know, don't put
making
me
look
there
bad.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Don't,
and
don't
it's jeopardizing his whole situation. Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm sure he was mad at them. And so that is probably the walk back. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of because then, you know, then Clutch gives the update to Dumas and makes it look like his first report is being contradicted. Whereas probably, I would guess, none of the information was made up and it all came from the same place.
Yeah.
Right. It makes him look bad. Like, he's just undoing the report that he made, but I'm sure he's very frustrated.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh, now I look like a fucking asshole when, you know, I would be absolutely stunned if he made that up out of thin air. So my guess is that Rich Paul.
It's so bizarre. It's a weird bizarre. Thing.
No, he definitely didn't make it up.
No.
So as part of Keith's original report, he said that that Simmons would like to be in one of the three California teams. There are four, but I guess that's, you know, what he's trying to say about Sacramento. And then the next day, Chris Broussard on FS1 said that I was told Ben Simmons is willing to go play anywhere for any of the other 29 teams except for the Philadelphia 76ers. Just other reporting that has come out. Sam Amick, who's a good one, is at The Athletic, and he said, barring a drastic change in Philly's asking price, Simmons won't be going to Sacramento because they're not going to trade Halliburton or Fox, just you know, as things stand a couple of days ago. And then Evan Damarell, who is a Cleveland Cavs reporter, said that Ben is willing to play in Cleveland, partly because he wants to be the best player on the team. That's great for him. What do you guys think about these leaks? Like, I sort of think that, I think Ben and Clutch know that he can't really steer his position. Like, that's not really in the cards for him. And also, people have drawn comparisons to the Harden situation and to the Jimmy Butler situation in terms of, like, you don't have to trade him before the season. And I would say the Jimmy Butler situation was a nightmare. Like, that was not good. It was not handled well. Like, the fact that it went on as long as it did put them in a bad position where they ended up trading Butler for zero first round picks and zero stars. They got Covington, who we love, Dario, who we love, and Jared Bayless. Like, that was a terrible outcome. That should not be like a frame of how you should do this trade. And Harden, like, the Rockets got everything for Harden because he's an MVP candidate every year. So he could come up in a fat suit and like throw the ball at the team staffers all practice, and they'll still trade whatever you want for him because he's like 300 times better than Ben. Like, there is a point at which your leverage is gone. The teams who want him want him, and you just need to pit them against each other and see who's going to give you the most and move on with your life. So, Dan, what do you think about, you know, where it seems like Ben is okay to play, and what do you think about those comparisons to Butler and Harden?
Yeah, I mean, these are clearly not ideal outcomes. Like, if the concern, and there's a difference too, because like the Rockets know if Harden's gone, they rebuild.
Yeah,
the Timberwolves aren't competing anyway, and know that if Butler's gone, they're rebuilt. Even though they still have Towns, they're just not in position. Right. And so you look at these situations and you're like, okay, well, how did it go while they still had them? Like, were they looking like, oh, they could be a playoff team, and then they had to get rid of these guys? And it's like, I think the Timberwolves were like 1-7 or 1-6 when they traded Jimmy Butler. Like, it was a disaster. They right. they actually like won a few games after they traded him because it was so bad there. And the Rockets, I mean, they were just bad anyway, but like things weren't going well and everyone hated Harden. Like, morale was low. There was apparently like a huge blow up at practice the day before they finally traded him. And there were players.
And it's certainly not like they held him and then got more value. Because
no, but and players were saying things in the media about how like, oh, well, like, you know, if he doesn't want to be here, like, you know, he's not even giving us a shot. Like, clearly guys were like offended on the team. Right. And why hold on to him? Like, when it comes to Ben, even before he was going to hold out, things aren't getting better by having him here for a little bit while he doesn't want to be here. We've seen that. It's bad. It's just that never works. And then now he's not even going to play. Like, now you're just going to be worse because you didn't get the package you're getting for him yet.
The other key distinction between the Sixers situation and those situations are that the Rockets were dying to keep James Harden. Like, because the Sixers really want to trade Ben, and they have all offseason. They're just, like, holding out for value's sake. Like, it's very clear that, like, they're not trying to, like, continue with this core. Emily, what do you think about where Ben reportedly wants to go and about the comparisons with those other guys?
Yeah, I don't think the comparison, it's not really, it's more like apples to oranges. They're just like very different situations. One, because we want to get rid of him. Two, because he's not as good as either of those guys. And I think that, I mean, like a Jimmy Butler-esque outcome would not be good. Like, that's not yeah. what I want. Like, as much right. as I love Robert Covington, I was in a deep period of mourning when we got rid of him. I need more value than that for Ben. So that's not, like, that wouldn't be a good outcome. As far as, like, where he wants to go, I really don't think, like you said, that he's going to be able to steer it at all. I kind of think the idea of Ben in Cleveland is funny just because it's Cleveland. No offense. to Ohio. But I think part of the thing is, like, Ben wants to play with like those young guys in Cleveland, but the only way a Cleveland trade is going to happen, if it's just the two teams, is if we get those young guys. So then they're just going to suck.
Darius Garland. Yeah. Darius Garland is that clutch. And,
well, he's not going to be, they probably value him.
They won't trade. You're right. They won't trade him. But that's one of the reasons that it was, Ben would be the best player, and he would play with his agency mate.
But like, how ridiculous is, like, you hear like almost every other player in the league trying to put themselves in a championship situation, and yeah. he just wants to be the best player. He wants to be appreciated. Like, I don't know. Like, it kind of just it just backs up more what everyone, his biggest critics all along have been saying. You could even call him the haters. You could say he's feeding right into what the haters have been saying. Like the people, right. like the Ben sucks people who say like Ben's just a loser. Like, is this a winner thing to do, to be like perfectly happy going to a way worse team so you can just be the best player? Like, that's, I'm sorry. That's just, it's just playing right into what everyone said.
So I mentioned that, of course, nobody has denied Keith's report because it's true, but also Derek Bodner of The Athletic independently confirmed that report. So this is obviously what the situation is at the moment. Now, the next day, all this happens, Joel Embiid tweets about like a Real Madrid trade. Like, when will Real Madrid make a trade? We'll wait until January, something. I don't really understand it, but I knew that it was him being like subversive and hilarious. The next morning, we all sort of wake up to a report from Jeff Zilgit of USA Today. And he said in part, The Simmons-Embiid rift had been escalating. A person with knowledge of the situation told USA Today Sports. Now, then Joel quote tweets that, and he says, "Sources, trust me, bro. Stop using my name to push people's agendas. I love and hate drama. I love playing with Ben. Stats don't lie. He's an amazing player, and we all didn't get the job done. It's on me personally. I hope he is back because I hope everyone is back because we know we're good enough to win. From my own experience, y'all have no idea how much the media makes stuff up for followers, and shame on you for believing them. I haven't forgotten, but 2 years ago, I got booed. People in Philly wanted me to be traded. I even shushed them. Only the real ones didn't, but I just put in the work in that offseason to be better because I knew I wasn't playing up to my potential. Philly fans, y'all also gotta be better. For clarity, I love the criticism. I love when I'm told I can't do something. It makes work harder. It makes me work harder to prove everyone wrong, but not everyone is built like that." Few things. One is that I think for me, this is Joel being like, "Hey, don't put my name in. Like, leave me out of this. Like, I'm not a star killer. I'm not the reason that Ben's leaving." Like, because Joel didn't tweet anything to dispute the report that Ben wants to be out of here, and or any of the other reports that the Sixers are trying to trade Ben. What Joel disputed was Ben and Joel have a rift, and this is partly driving him out of town. So I think Joel really didn't like that insinuation, because all reporting that we have is that, like, they were mainly fine, you know, especially this year. I think they were fine interpersonally until Joel's quote. I really don't like telling fans what they need to do after you just blew like two giant leads and lost to the Hawks in the playoffs. Like, I think that he just went one step too far in defending himself in the situation. And, like, of course, he worked it all the way back around to a diss on Ben when he said not everybody's built that way. I think that's great. But I don't really want to hear about what the fans need to do, except for, of course, in situations of, like, throwing popcorn on Russell Westbrook or anything racist. Like, obviously, those things are, like, outlier bad fans who should be banned from the arena. Like, the Sixers fans booing, like, these people pay hard-earned money to go and watch them, and if they suck, they're allowed to make this noise that we've agreed is the noise for "you're not playing well and I don't like it." Like, that's within their bounds. And, like, there was a lot that Ben could have made an effort to do in his career in Philadelphia that he literally did not. So I think that Joel went one step too far. It seems like he sort of walked it back with the next tweet about how he loves the criticism. You know, I wasn't happy to, of course, see him say that he loves playing with Ben and wants everybody back, but I think that he was defending himself. Emily, what's your takeaway on that?
Yeah, I don't love the "fan should be better," but I also think that Joel has built so much goodwill up that I can kind of brush it off and not get mad about it. Like,
agree.
If someone else had said that, you know, like when Danny Green said stuff about the fans, we got so much more riled up, because it's like, you have not earned your right to say stuff about us. Where Joel, not that you've, like, earned a right, but there's just so much about him. And it's like, you know, we were mad about the games against the Hawks, but also, like, Joel did it on one meniscus and tried to put everyone on his back. So, like, really, I'm not mad at him for, I wasn't booing him. Like, I'm trying to, it's really hard to get mad at him. I just love him so much. That's my full circle moment. Like, I can't get mad at him because I love him so much.
And I will say, I think when he was getting booed during that Horford year, he was really probably taking some of the brunt of the mistakes of other members of the team that put the team in that situation. Like, Joel was not as good that year, but I do think that a lot was done against, you know, helping him play well. But again, fans are allowed to boo whoever they want to boo when teams aren't playing well. Dan, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I love Joel. I can never get mad at Joel. I would never boo Joel. That said, Joel was really hard to watch that year and hard to defend. Like, if you remember, after that season, you had people, like, on the internet saying, like, "Oh, if the Sixers have to trade someone for Harden, it should be Joel, not Ben." Like, and, like, obviously, I didn't agree with that. But, like, it got hard to defend him as he went out and looked disinterested, like night after night. And I understand why. Like I said, love him, can never get mad at him. I understand why he was booed, because he looked miserable out there and was playing worse than he had played. I think that his comment is dumb. Like I said, like, can't get mad at him, but it just is kind of silly. There is a big difference between saying, like, there's some real jerks out there and they can get under people's skin, and like, we need to make sure that these people are like not allowed in there. People who are like committing crimes in the stadium or like being hateful. Fans in general needing to be better doesn't really make any sense. We didn't blow these leads to the Hawks. We paid a lot of money to go watch them blow these leads to the Hawks, and we're allowed to be upset about it. I'm not going to be a weirdo and stand there and cheer them off the court if they blew a 26 point lead. I'm not sorry about it. I would do it again. And like you said, like, Joel has built up a lot of goodwill. Joel has, you know, I'm sure some of it's BS and some of it he means, but shown a lot of appreciation to, you know, the people who come out and watch him and cheer him on. And Ben
and has have for years, including when he was hurt and when the team was terrible, and the fans and Joel have been through a lot together.
But yeah, like you said, Ben has not really done much to build up much goodwill here, and he's going to have like a shorter string for getting booed. And in all honesty, I don't think it was like that short of a leash until the fans decided to boo. I mean, it went from Ben, please take a shot, to like Ben, please take a layup, and like Ben, make a foul shot. Like it went from shooting threes to like taking any field goal attempt or shooting above 30% from the foul line. He couldn't do those things. So like, that's not a high bar. And if you can't understand why that player would be booed, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, the way to stop people from booing is, like you said, is to play better. Like, when Joel shushed the crowd, it's because he was doing something good then. And then people, when you get shushed, I honestly like would then cheer. Like, I love that kind of like competitive behavior. Like, you're booing me, like, watch me slam this ball down and then I'll shush you. And then Philly fans typically will cheer that because they like that kind of like aggressive, like, I'll show you. At least me, I shouldn't like lump everyone together, but I like that kind of stuff. So like,
show us you can be better.
All needs to do is do something. And he failed to do anything, literally anything. So
yeah, I mean, just overall, like, you were the one seed and you had to beat the Wizards and the Hawks to play in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you didn't get there. Like, nobody wants to hear about what the fans need to do better. Like, that's just sort of the end of it. I you know, there's no issue with Joel. He just signed a Supermax. Like, the city is his still. Like, it was just sort of, I think, one step too far in absolving himself from the Ben situation. All right, we've got 5 minutes left. What else can we say? They're starting to spin. Clutch is starting to say that Ben was not used properly or not supported right in his time in Philadelphia. I think we'll probably talk about that a lot more next week or as the weeks go on. But I think that is revisionist history and not accurate.
Well, as soon as he gets traded, that's when like all of the like hit pieces will come out. So
right. On both sides, like, there will be.
I honestly can't wait for them.
Yeah,
there. And this is going to be somewhat of a generalization, but like, if you're like a Ben supporter and or you're in Ben's camp, just anyone, just, you know, who is still really high on Ben and thinks, you know, maybe I feel like the local media is treating him unfairly, right? Like, whether, you know, Newbeck wrote a lot of like pretty tough on Ben articles that I thought were super well written. And I think even some of the beat guys, if you look at like Bodner and Hoffman, their podcast, they've been super tough on Ben. Right. And it's like, obviously some of that is like, most of that is from his play, but it's like a big reason you're going to see a lot of these hit pieces. And this isn't about anyone I named in particular, but like the media in general, I think there seems to be, and this is me reading between the lines, I don't know this for sure, but I would expect, just based on a lot of what's written from people mad at Ben, that Ben might not be that well liked. Like, just like as like a guy around the building, like you see him, like he's kind of been tough on Keith on some of Keith's questions. This is stuff you can see on TV, which is why I'm kind of speculating on it. I don't know this for sure. But like, if the fact that we all expect to see like all these negative Ben pieces come out should say a lot about how he's kind of viewed by the people who are in the building, I would guess.
In particular, I wanted to shout out Kyle wrote a piece, and Mike O'Connor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez both wrote pieces that were really good about Ben has every right to demand a trade at this point where the team is trying to trade him and he wants to get out of there. Like, that's every player's right. But the lack of accountability for so much that has gone on in Philadelphia is just like permeates this whole thing and makes it all seem like a referendum on him and who he's been so far in Philadelphia.
Well, and these are people who are there every day.
Right. And they know what they're talking about. That's basically it. Before we get to the pod with BLG on the Eagles, Gastroenteritis Blues, we now have our own feed. So you're listening to this likely on the Liberty Ballers podcast feed. We have our own one now. So if you look up in Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can subscribe and rate and review. Give us some momentum there. What we're going to be doing basically is releasing in two places. We're going to be releasing our Monday episodes on Liberty Ballers and on our new feed, which is now separate from Liberty Ballers. And we'll also be doing midweek podcasts just as the summer slows down and we don't have any content.
And like emergency podcasts as necessary.
Exactly. Right. So if Ben gets traded, we will record immediately after that happens. And
Furkan releases more pictures, we'll record.
Emergency.
Right. You guys, if you listen to us, you know that an emergency for us might not be the emergencies covered by a lot of the other local pods. So like,
right.
Oh, like someone says something annoying, that could be an emergency pod. We're going to hopefully be putting out some pods in areas that other pods are not getting to so quickly. So you should definitely look out for us for that.
Yeah, so subscribe to that feed and you can hear us. I think our first one is going to be on Wednesday. We are in negotiations with a former Sixer to come on that podcast. So we're trying to confirm that and we're hoping that that'll be our first exclusive one on the other feed. So thank you to everybody who listens to this thing every week. And we hope that you'll just come with us over there. We're not leaving the Liberty Ballers feed. It'll still be here. But now if you want to hear all the podcasts, you'll get more of them over there. Just look up the Gastroenteritis Blues on any podcast service. Good to see you guys. Happy Rosh Hashanah. Be safe and be great and enjoy the rest of this. Oh, there'll be an ad and then you'll hear the podcast with BLG. Good to see you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Hi. welcome or welcome back. I'm not really sure the order we're doing this to the Gastroenteritis Blues. Steve isn't here. Steve makes those calls. So we're doing recording in two parts. We're going to have one part, which is not this part, which maybe you heard it yet. Maybe you haven't heard it yet, where we're basically going to complain about Ben Simmons exclusively. And this part is only partly.
Which we never do. We never.
That's new for us. So I'm Dan. I'm here with Emily Cannell. And we're here with Brandon Lee Galton from Bleeding Green Nation. We're talking Eagles, although he's definitely going to want to talk Ben Simmons too, because he's been ahead of the curve on that one. So, well, first of all, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back here with you. Eagle season, almost about a week away. That's just crazy to say that as I'm saying that. NFL yeah. football season, less than a week away. First game, Cowboys losing to the Buccaneers on Thursday. So I can't wait.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I've missed football. I think we've all missed football. So, you know, I'm going to start off with, I think, the obvious place to start here, the biggest question, what the hell happened to Travis Fulgham? I mean, what's going on? He looked like a stud, and now he didn't even make the team.
Yeah, so I think that's really crazy, right? In the sense of, like, this is a dude who led the NFL in receiving yards for what, like 4 or 5 week stretch last year? Like, that's insane. Like, that's so crazy to say. But I think what happened there is that, look, there was a reason that teams moved on from Travis Fulgham last summer before the Eagles got him. Like, the Lions spent like a 6th round pick or whatever on him, and then they cut him, and then the Packers picked him up and they cut him like a day or two later. There was like reasons for that. And I think the Eagles eventually saw that, and we saw him kind of get in the doghouse last year during the season after he had that big stretch. And we're all like, what is this coaching staff doing? Like, why are they playing Alshon Jeffrey over him? And to be fair, that's still a crazy decision. But I think part of it came from, like, I hate to question a person's, you know, work ethic without me actually seeing it. But I think there was some kind of focus issues there And he just had a bad training camp, honestly. Like, he didn't deserve to make the team. Like, he was dropping the ball a lot. There were a lot of plays where, like, he just didn't make the catch. Like, it wasn't necessarily, like, a drop, but it was, like, there's a play to be made, and he just didn't make the play. That happened, like, way too often. So I think with all that, they just decided, like, he didn't do enough to deserve to make the team. And it's crazy. I know, because he's actually, like, the only receiver they have, when you think about it, is actually, like, produced in a game at a high level. Like, that's no one else has done that. So, but yeah, I just think it's such a bad camp that, like, they just felt like they couldn't keep him.
I mean, yeah, they kept J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, which I don't think anyone would have seen coming. Yeah, it's crazy.
So, speaking of wide receivers, we've got Quez Watkins, who I guess is the starting wide receiver because no one else has played real football. So, what can you tell us about him?
I think Quez has had an awesome training camp. Like, anything you have wanted to see out of a wide receiver in terms of, like, hey, can this guy outrun people down the field? Yes. Can he make leaping contested catches? Yes. Can he run really sharp routes to get open? Yeah. Like, he's done everything. Can he take the ball and get yards after the catch? I mean, we all saw that in the preseason on his touchdown reception from Joe Flacco. Like, he done it all. I really don't know what more Quez Watkins could have possibly done to have a better summer. Like, and he started training camp out kind of working with, like, third team, second team. But now he's, like, one of the top three guys. Like, they didn't even really play him too much in the final preseason game other than, like, you know, one drive or whatever it was. So he's worked his way into being a starter. I feel good about him. He's only, like, 23 or so. So I think the arrow is definitely pointing up on him. And I don't think he's ever going to be, like, a volume target. You know, you're not, like, throwing to him in every single play. He's not, like, your go-to guy. But I think he's going to be efficient. He's going to be a big play guy. He's going to come up in key spots. Just a really nice player and a really pleasant surprise. And a lot of Eagles teammates have picked him as the guy, like, that's going to be the breakout star this year, especially in offense.
Yeah, he seems like kind of the consensus, like, Eagle who stood out in a good way throughout the summer, because, you know, we're through the preseason at this point. But I want to know, besides him, because he's the guy you're always hearing about, who stood out in a good way and also in a bad way?
I would say in a good way, Josh Sweat is right up there. So on BGN Radio, my co-host Jimmy Kemsky and I would do these little, like, MVP, LVP sections of, like, we'd give a point to a player each day after practice, after every single practice. And Quez Watkins, I believe, and Josh Sweat were tied above the leaderboard. They're definitely both up there. And Josh Sweat has been awesome just in terms of, he's, like, living in the backfield. I mean, Javon Hargrave has too. Kind of want to throw him in there. Those guys are, I think, going to create a lot of disruption. And then someone who stood out in a bad way is not a surprise to me, but Andre Dillard. I mean, the Eagles, talk about disappointing first-round picks. I mean, it's not the same situation as Markelle Fultz, obviously, because what could be, because that's so insane. But, like, if you're looking for just, like, you know, super disappointing, a player they traded up for, it's Andre Dillard. That, you know, a lot of people, and then fittingly too, both from the state of Washington. So there are some parallels there. But yeah, he was just really bad. He's getting dominated, really. Like, he would get pushed on the ground. I've never seen a player, an offensive lineman, get, like, pushed to the ground, other than maybe, you know, like a training camp body, an undrafted rookie free agent, as much as Andre Dillard has. Now everyone's like, oh, he looked better in the preseason game. Okay, it was a short sample size. It was against the Jets, who were really bad. So I don't really put a ton into that. He had a really bad camp. And honestly, I don't think he deserved to make the team just based on merit.
And is this a situation where you think we might be on, like, Andre Dillard trade watch in some way? Like, does anyone want him? And it seems like, I mean, he's not starting. So what's even going to happen here?
Yeah, so that's part of my, like, problem with this is, like, people are like, oh, you should just keep him as a backup because you can never have too many offensive linemen. And he's had so many injuries last year to the offensive line. And I understand the argument there, but, like, he's bad, first of all, which is a problem. Second of all, he's not versatile. He can only play left tackle. And, like, you want your backups to play multiple positions. Third of all, like, he's been injury prone. So, like, you're like, okay, what if we need to play him? Because if we get injured, well, like, he's going to get injured probably, or at least the last two training camps, he's had injuries. So I just don't think he's a good backup option. I think they should trade him. I don't think there's a big market for him. And I think Howie Roseman doesn't want to take the L on that. Like, he doesn't want to get, like, pennies on the dollar for him, which I think is the wrong way to look at it. Because I think, you know, to make a Sixers parallel here, a lot of people said that with Ja. They're like, you can't trade Ja. His value's too low. Well, it's like, guess what? Like, it's not going any higher. Like, you might as well get what you can for him now, get something for him, because eventually you're gonna, I mean, basically they had to give stuff up to dump him, right? Like, so like, you don't want to get to
hey
that
we got now. Eight games of Trevor Booker for him, so it was a great yeah trade.
What a bargain. Yeah, so I just think it's to a point where like they should trade him. They have better options, like Brett Toth, I think is a more inspiring option. And then LaRaven Clark is on the practice squad right now, and apparently other teams actually wanted to go after him. I'm guessing the Eagles kind of paid him more money to stay there. I just think those are better options, honestly, than Andre Dillard right now. Maybe not in the long term if you have hope for him, but I think that ship has sailed here. You know, there isn't a spot for him. Like, Jordan Mailata is the starting left tackle, I believe, of the future once they sign him to an extension. And I think they should just get whatever they can for Dillard.
So Tony Romo, everyone's favorite Cowboy, has predicted that the Eagles will have a surprisingly good season. What is your, do you think, is the key to the Eagles having this surprisingly good season? What is Romo seeing that he's making him so optimistic about the season?
So, like, I feel like this take has become more and more common. But, like, I feel like, guys, if we're all saying that, like, the Eagles are going to surprise people, then, like, no one's really saying that. Like, because then everyone's believing that, and then it's not a surprise at all. But I think there definitely is optimism building around this team just based on it was a positive training camp for them. Like, they didn't have major injuries. They didn't have major, like, drama and everything. Like, things are kind of just going well, seemingly, on paper for them. Young players got better. There's encouraging signs. And look, I'm not Mr. Always Eagles, just optimist over here. I've been very critical of the team. So for me to say that, I feel like means a little something. So I think for them to have a great season, their surprise season, you know, I don't think this is a double-digit win team like he did. Romo said like 10 or 11 wins. I don't think that. I think it's a combination of the division not being great, the schedule kind of being relatively easier compared to other schedules out there. I think it's Jalen Hurts not necessarily, you know, becoming like a top five quarterback all of a sudden, but him using his mobility and moving the offense and honestly just not being as bad as it was and unwatchable as it was last year. And the defense has looked really good in camp. I think there's definitely some intrigue there. I talked about Josh Sweat, Javon Hargrave. I think they're going to generate pressure. I think Jonathan Gannon might be a really good defensive coordinator. A lot of teams wanted him this offseason. The Eagles were lucky to get him. And the Eagles actually wanted him basically no matter who they hired. If they're going to go with Josh McDaniels or Nick Sirianni, they wanted Gannon as their defensive coordinator. So there's, you know, there's a lot of reasons you can look to for encouragement. But, you know, I still think this is like an 8-9 kind of team, maybe 9-8, somewhere around that.
All right, so I have to be this guy. I'm going to ask it. Devontae Smith seems really cool. He looks really good. But Justin Fields has also looked great. is there any – I know it's just the preseason. He looked really good. Is there any part of us that's like, you know – and it was crazy to me. I mean, I don't even follow football that closely besides generally rooting for the Eagles and watching all of their games. But – like just especially college football, but Justin Fields, like his whole life was like it was Trevor Lawrence then Justin Fields, and to watch him fall so far was kind of crazy. I know there was some concern about like locker room stuff, maybe we talked about that last time you were on the pod, but is there, do you think there's any regret, not necessarily even from you, but like any feeling that like just around the team, not even from the team necessarily, that like, wow, maybe we should have taken this quarterback? They're just talking about being a quarterback factory and they didn't take the first round quarterback who dropped.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's going to be a big storyline for not only the Eagles, but the Broncos, the Panthers, like a bunch of teams here that, and you could argue the Giants, a lot of teams that passed up on him. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a real angle to follow. I think Justin Fields preseason, at least I didn't see like the full run of his, I think, second and third games or whatever. But I think like I watched his entire first game. I watched every single snap from him. So I saw like all the hype around it. And I'm like, I think people got to calm down a little bit because like the hype I saw like on Twitter, for example, did not match exactly what I saw on the field. Like, he threw a touchdown pass. The guy was literally wide open. Like that was just a good scheme. Like, I don't think any quarterback makes that throw. He had a really bad like near interception that I didn't see anyone talk about on Twitter. He had a really bad fumble at one point that I think he recovered, but like was really bad and like shouldn't have. So like, you know, I think there's some issues there. And I also think I think maybe I touched on this. I don't remember if we did before the draft, but last time my argument with like kind of let's cool it a little bit on Justin Fields is like the Bears took him of every team. When have the Bears, especially this regime with Ryan Pace, who has like traded up for Mitch Trubisky and traded like a draft pick too high for Nick Foles and given big money to Mike Lennon, and now signed Andy Dalton and also wanted Carson Wentz a lot. Like the Bears wanted Carson Wentz. Like maybe they're not the expert on quarterbacks and like just don't deserve the automatic benefit of the doubt. I do like Justin Fields. Like I think he has talent. Like I don't know that he's an elite guy though. I think you're maybe talking about like a top like 20, top 15 kind of guy, like a nice player, but I don't know that he's like a can't miss. Like, oh, like he might be better than Jalen Hurts. And I can see why that annoys people. But to me, like the goal with the Eagles this offseason wasn't like draft a quarterback just because you think he's going to be better than Jalen Hurts. Like, no, draft a quarterback because you think he's going to be like a top five, like elite player, has a chance to be the best player in the NFL. I don't think Justin Fields, like, I don't think that's the most likely outcome for him, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being too harsh.
Hey, that answer made me feel really good. So I that's great.
So speaking of Jalen Hurts, what are your thoughts kind of on his preseason? He seems like a good, the team seems to like him, his teammates seem to really like him, which is a change of pace and a nice one. But as far as his like on-field play and like how, just general thoughts on how you think it'll go this year and how his preseason was.
I think that's an important point. His teammates don't hate him like they did with Carson Wentz.
It's really nice. Yeah, I mean, right?
Yeah, it's a good it's important like to have a leader on the team that players do not dislike. It's important. I think Jalen Hurts, again, kind of talking about how the vibes of the team are positive, I think he factors into that. I think he kind of had overall an up and down training camp. I think he kind of got better as it went along. He had his best day, I would say, against the Jets in the Eagles' final training camp practice. So he ended on a positive note, which is good to see. I think something I said during training camp, I still kind of stand by. Like, I don't think he did anything that is like, hey, oh, we don't even need to look for a quarterback anymore. Like Jalen Hurts is 100% the guy. I mean, I don't think he could necessarily anyway, because it's just training camp. He obviously has to prove that in the real games. But even so, like, I still think there are a lot of questions about him entering the season. I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to be, like, terrible. I don't think that's necessarily, like, the most likely outcome. I think it's kind of, he's going to be somewhere in that, again, kind of almost like maybe where I was talking about with Justin Fields, like that top 15, top 20 kind of range, where obviously his rushing ability is really going to raise his floor, just because even if he's not, you know, advanced enough with his arm, like he's going to be able to just run a lot, and that's extremely valuable. I don't have 100% confidence in him, like that he's the guy going into the season, but I definitely am like in wait and see mode. I'm more than willing to give him a chance to I don't even say prove me wrong, because like I'm going into open-minded. I think he potentially can be the guy. I just don't think it's super likely he will, but I think he's coming off a solid training camp for him, and I think there's enough here working around him that he can kind of prove he is the guy or not. Like, I think we're going to get enough data from this year to say, like, we kind of know what Jalen Hurts is and if they should stick with him or not.
So, more quarterbacks. Big Eagles trade acquired Gardner Minshew, who is most famous for being drafted 11 picks after Eagles legend Clayton Thorson. What do we think about this? It seemed to me like that was decent value for him. What do you think?
I think it's a good trade because you're getting a guy who has experience in the NFL as a backup, which is always good. And the numbers from Jacksonville in a bad situation, pretty decent. I believe passer rating of like 92 or something like that. It's pretty solid for especially a third string quarterback. I think, you know, it was kind of confusing at first. It's like, wait, why are the Eagles trading for another quarterback? And then obviously Howie Roseman here is out here himself joking about how they're a quarterback factory. It makes sense from a different kind of layer. So first of all, I think you can look at it as he's under contract for next season, and now you have a cheap backup for next year. I know that's kind of weird to think about next year already, but I think there's value in that. I think my biggest fears about this Eagles season was like Jalen Hurts goes down with a season-ending injury, knock on wood, early in the year, and then you're just watching Joe Flacco for like 13 games or something. Like, there's nothing. What is the point of that? Like, there's nothing to be gained. Like, we're not learning anything about Joe Flacco. He's going to turn 37 in January. Like, we know who Joe Flacco is, and he's not going to be a long-term answer for the Eagles at all. And he's probably not going to be that good. So that was one of my biggest fears. And this kind of eliminates that, because even if Flacco has to play a lot, or if Hurts goes down, well, then you just play Gardner Minshew if you're playing it over a long course of time. If, like, you know, Hurts gets hurt for a game or two, then you put Blackman there, you see how he can do, whatever, especially if it's early in the season, Minshew just being acquired here. But if it's a long stretch, then you play Minshew, and he's probably not going to be your guy, your franchise quarterback, but maybe he plays well and surprises you and you give him a chance, or he plays well and you're able to flip him next offseason for something more than you just traded for him, like a fourth round pick or a fifth round pick instead of the sixth round pick you gave up this year. So yeah, I think it's a good chance to take. It's only a sixth round pick, but such a low cost, obviously can elevate to a fifth if he plays like 50% of the snaps in three games this year. But even if you have to pay that, like, it's pretty reasonable. So I think it's a good trade.
So speaking of Joe Flacco, I always have to ask about my guy. Delaware, you know, love him. But he, is there any, I'm thinking of, like, he's, like you said, he's 37. He's not like someone that they're developing. Are they using him at all as like a Josh McCown, like old head in the locker room? Like, he has had some playoff success, did the whole bet on himself and then kind of fell apart. But I mean, of the Eagles on the roster outside of, you know, the guys that went to the Super Bowl, he's probably like one of the most experienced playoff players that they have, right?
Yeah. So it's weird because like Flacco's never been like, I would definitely say they're not the same in terms of Josh McCown and Joe Flacco.
Oh, yeah.
Flacco, even as recently a couple of years ago, or whenever in Denver, he was like, I'm not here, you know, to mentor Drew Lock or whatever. I'm here to like win the job and be the quarterback. And I think he knows the situation in Philly. Like, he knows that Jalen Hurts is the guy. I don't think he's under any illusions otherwise, but I still think he's like, hey, if he's going to get a crack at that job, like he wants it. He's not like the most, I think, like veteran or mentor friendly kind of guy. Not to say he's not going to help Jalen Hurts out at all, but you know, I just don't think like Josh McCown, like he was like born for that role. Like, Josh McCown was out there on the sideline or like going up to Carson Wentz and like really gassing him up and everything. I think it's kind of a different dynamic a little bit, but I'm sure Hurts will lean on his, you know, veteran leadership to some extent. And then the locker room as a whole, having a guy like that around adds credibility to the quarterback room to some extent and the locker room and everything, just like, you know, knowing someone who's been there before, if they want to pick his brain or whatever, rely on him or I don't know, any kind of positive thing you can attribute to that. But yeah, it's kind of it's a weird dynamic between Hurts trying to prove himself, Flacco having been there, done it before, like playing late into preseason games and like looking good. And then Minshew, who also is, you know, I think thinks of himself highly. These are like alphas in this quarterback room. Like, these are guys who I think don't think of themselves as like backups. They all think of themselves as starters.
So the Zach Ertz vibes seem a lot better now, in that he's here. He's not asking to be traded anymore, it sounds like, but we're kind of in a weird spot where it's like he's not going to be traded, but he's in the last year of his deal. It seems like there's no way he's going to be back next year, if I'm correct in that. So, like, is this going to be kind of like a goodbye tour? I mean, he was, you know, he had the winning touchdown catch in the Super Bowl, like, and now he's just kind of like playing out this last season, but he's not retiring. Like, it's kind of a weird in-between thing. Like, what do you think we're going to see in regards to Zach Ertz?
It is weird. It is a weird situation. My thought on Ertz was that he was going to be traded or cut or whatever this offseason. Obviously, that hasn't happened. So kind of my new thought on this is that it's possible in my mind that Howie Roseman said to Zach Ertz, like, look, if you want to go, like, if you don't want to be here, you're going to have to play by the rules like that I'm setting out here if you want a chance to leave. Because if you're a good teammate, and you come in and you get off to a good start to the season and we're bad, then we can trade you before the deadline. And then teams will want to trade for you because you're having a good season, because you're being a good soldier, and we can get fair value for you. And if we can get that, then we'll move you somewhere. So that's kind of my thinking on that. If they're bad, like if they're having a bad season. And then the other part of it is like, well, and then if we're good, then you'll probably just want to stay because you're doing well. The team is doing well. So you'll be happy here. And then you can just finish out the year and then we can see how things go after the season. We can evaluate there if you want to come back or you want to move on. We'll talk about it after. We can, you know, cross that bridge when we get there, so to speak. So I think that's maybe where it is at right now. But it is weird because you have Dallas Goedert here still. And I feel like you really kind of wanted to see what he might look like as tight end one before signing him to an extension. And there have been trade rumors with him. It kind of came up this week that the Vikings had or talked with the Eagles about that. Obviously, they didn't trade for him. They traded for Chris Herndon from the Jets instead, so that's not going to happen. But there was also a note in that story that like Dallas Goedert's name had previously come up in trade talks, especially with the Texans. And I've heard that with like multiple different things. Like Jeff McClain kind of intimated that earlier in training camp, kind of posited it as speculation more than a hard report. But he put that out there. A couple of people privately had I've heard that from. So like, I don't know. There's like, there maybe might be something to that. Maybe it's him who actually gets moved instead and they re-sign Ertz. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think that's impossible, but it's definitely weird. Like, I don't fully know how this is going to play out. It's a weird dynamic right now.
Well, Goddard has to be a package deal with Avante Maddox if he gets traded, because they're doing commercials and everything now.
Yes.
They're very cute together. They're like the Eagles, like Furkan and Matisse, you know?
Yes. It's
great. And very cute. So after seeing, you know, a preseason, a training camp, how are you and we as a whole, how should we be feeling about Nick Sirianni? What are we thinking?
I think there should be reason to be encouraged, just because, again, I thought they had a successful camp. We're not like, this isn't like the Giants last year when like Joe Judge is like making players like run laps or do all, you know, all this weird stuff. Nick Sirianni has a lot of energy, and I think you're seeing that out of the team. But that was especially apparent in the joint training camp practices. Like the Eagles, I think, looked like the better team against the Patriots and the Jets in practices. And I think part of that was just the energy you saw. They were just having a lot of fun out there, and that's good. A big reason why the 2017 Eagles were, I think, so good, and not to say this team is anything like the 2017 Eagles, but a big reason why they had success is they knew how to keep things loose and how to have fun. And you remember that. Like, you remember all the touchdown celebrations and everything. Like, there was just positive vibes, positive energy, and I think this team has that. And that's Nick Sirianni. And I think another big thing about Nick Sirianni is competition. And I think these practices this offseason were very competitive. So I think this team is in a good, again, a good, like, good vibes, good space right now. I'm not saying they're going to do anything special this year, but I think based on what we've seen out of Sirianni so far, I feel good now. A big question that remains is, like, can he be a good play caller? Like, we don't know. We've literally never seen him do that. He's never had to do it as an offensive coordinator. He's never been a head coach before. So that's, like, very much unanswered. And if he stinks at that, then everything else kind of doesn't really matter. So that's the big question to be answered. But I feel like we've seen enough to kind of have, you know, some hope, some optimism. I feel like we should be more encouraged as opposed to discouraged going into the season.
Well, I'm getting excited. So last Eagles question, what's your record prediction for this year?
Yeah, so I actually had them going 8-9 back when I wasn't even as positive about them in April or whenever the schedule came out, and or May. And I was like, that kind of seems high to me. Like, I was somehow went high in my own prediction. Maybe it's like the, you know, the me wanting to see them do well and me like fighting against like the lot more logical or whatever me, the emotional me versus the logical me. But I think I guess I kind of feel more confident in that 8-9 now. Like, I think that's actually not just the top end. I think that's like kind of more where they're going to be at, give or take a game, 9-8. 7-10. The new record thing is totally throwing me off. I think I got it, but
it's weird.
But yeah, I think they're kind of, yeah, it's weird. I think I'm kind of in that range though. I think they can do some good things, but I just don't think they're like, I don't think they're there yet. Like, this is a first year thing. They're in a transition year. Hurts, there's uncertainty. The roster has some good pieces to work with, but the depth, as we've seen in the preseason, is just not there. If they get hit by injuries, that's a big deal. So yeah, I think they're kind of like 8-9 teams.
Is the division in play for them, you think?
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone in this division is running away with it. The Giants, I think, I'm feeling worse and worse about them. Better for the Eagles' sake, but they're not trending in a good way at all. Their offensive line stinks. Quarterback is not the guy. Head coach, Brent Jury, out on him. Washington, I think, is going to win the division still, just because I think that defense is so good. And I think people are almost underrating it. Like everyone's kind of forgetting about that. You know, obviously they weren't great last year, but it was as a team. But the defense is so good. And Fitzpatrick Lee isn't perfect, but he doesn't need to be. Like, the quarterbacks they were working with last year were terrible. Like, Dwayne Haskins is terrible. Al Smith, like, wasn't even, like, healthy enough to play, basically. He's like a corpse out there. And Kyle Allen is, you know, obviously not a good player either. So, like,
Brian Fitzpatrick, was a stud, though.
What?
I said Heinicke was a stud.
Yeah, for, like, a game, right? So, I think Fitzpatrick is like a big, even for all his flaws, I think he's a big upgrade, because Fitzpatrick's going to have some good games. Like, those guys never had good games, all those players. Mm-hmm. Like, Fitzpatrick will have some good games. He'll also have some really bad games, but I think that defense can kind of bail him out sometimes. So, like, he's going to turn the ball over. but they're going to get turnovers for him. And that's kind of mitigate some of that out. And then Dallas is kind of an interesting team because everyone thinks they're the favorite. But, like, I don't know. I think that defense still has a lot of question marks. I think Zeke is kind of cooked. I think Mike McCarthy isn't a good head coach. I think Dax is, you know, he's going to come back, and I think he's going to be, like, fine coming off the injury. But, like, I don't think he's having some kind of MVP season that people say he has. And especially that shoulder thing. That shoulder thing is, like, to me, is not nothing. Like, I don't think he's going to miss week one or necessarily miss games of it necessarily, at least right away. But, like, I feel like that might pop up again. Like, I don't think that's just, like, going to, like, go away forever just because he's over it right now. So there's the question marks all over. I think it's going to be competitive. When I did my record prediction for, like, the whole division, I think I had, like, some insane thing where Washington wins at 9-8 and all the other teams go 8-9. That's probably not going to happen. But, yeah, I don't think, like, the Eagles should be sort of the favorites at all, but they certainly have a chance.
Well, that's good. That's exciting. Okay, I'm very excited for the season, especially, like, even though we're, like, in this in-between year, that the division is, like, still can be in play on a weird, like, transition year is pretty fun. And also, when you were talking about the Giants trending down, I just got me thinking about all the talk they were, everything they were tweeting when the Eagles were tanking.
Oh, yeah.
About how they were going to come back and just wait till next season. It's so funny to hear that that's probably not going to happen. All right, so we are either now once again talking or for the first time talking about the Sixers on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Before anything, the last time you were on this podcast, it was before the playoffs. You have been low on Ben Simmons for a long time. You longer than me, and I've been low on Ben Simmons for as long as we've had this podcast. But I think, you know, you were right. So now the playoffs are over. I just go ahead, take your victory.
I mean, I don't want to be. I didn't never wanted to be right.
No, you would never want to be right. But listen, but I'm sure you got yelled at enough that you kind of at least have this, despite the fact that everything was awful for that whole series.
It might sound crazy to say, and I can't remember if I said this last time I talked to you guys, but, like, it was that Boston Celtics series, like, a few years ago, it was first year or whatever, that I started to have major doubts right then. I'm like, this is just not what a star player looks like to me. And I know he's young and whatever, but, like, at some level, you have to see more than this. You can't, you know what, like, a game in that series where he scored, like, 1 point, like, that's, like, man, like, I that's just rough. And beyond that, I think it's just been clear that, like, any idea or hope that he's going to improve is just, like, it's stupid, honestly. Like, what, when are we ever going to see him shoot? Like, if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now.
Oh, he's never going to shoot. It's too late.
It's not going to happen.
His form is not good. He hasn't changed it.
No. And, like, and if it does, like, if you trade him and he does somewhere else, like, fine, whatever. Like, that's not something you should be kicking yourself for, because, like, there's no way for you to ever, like, reliably think that was going to happen here. And I mean, you've seen the reports and everything. Like, the Sixers want to work with him or whatever, and he doesn't want to work on not his terms. It's very much like Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz and Ben Simmons, there's too many parallels. I think they have this very, they're very arrogant. And I get, like, being a superstar, being an alpha, like, you kind of have to have some level of arrogance. I understand that, but it's a fine line. And I think they're very much on the wrong side of that line, and they're too arrogant. They don't want to get better on someone else's terms. I think that's, like, the biggest thing. They think they can help themselves get better. No, you don't know everything. I know it's very hard to tell a young person like that they don't know everything, but, like, they don't. And I just think you haven't seen that, like, desire to get better in a way that, like, the team is setting out for him, that everyone is trying to tell him how to get better. It's just so frustrating, man. It's so frustrating. I can't watch the Sixers until he's gone. I can't. Like, I've been thinking about this all off season, like, because it's tough for me because I want to watch the Sixers. Like, I can't do it until he's gone. And I don't know what that means, if he's actually still on the roster, but he's technically, like, not showing up and everything. I don't, that puts me in this weird limbo of this promise that I made to myself that I can't watch them, because I can't do it. It's the same story in the playoffs every year. We know what's going to happen. He needs to be gone. He has to be. I can't do it anymore.
The arrogance is a little bit like, it's a specific kind of thing where it's like, most stars you see in the NBA, I feel like they give off the impression that they're, like, they're trying to prove to you that they can get better at the things they're bad at. Like, you see Giannis, like, you could call that arrogance too. I mean, he was phenomenal, but just the amount of threes he took, and they were mostly bad shots, and there were games he was, like, 0 for 8 from three still shooting. Ben is different. Like, Ben has always given me the feeling that, like, he wants to prove that he doesn't need to get better. Like, he's good as is. Like, not necessarily not get better. Like, he's gotten better at defense, but he doesn't need to get better at the things that he doesn't want to get. Like, the things people say are important and focus on, it just feels like it makes him want to do it less. Like Brett challenging him to take the threes, not taking them anymore.
Yeah.
It's weird. I know that John Gonzalez wrote a piece for The Ringer on parallels between Wentz and Simmons, but it was more about kind of the lack of pandering. We're a pro pandering podcast. Emily loves the pandering. But, you know, he's talking about, I'm not sure, you know, if you've read it or if people listening have read it, but he talked about, you know, Harper basically did it right away. And it's so easy because, like, we don't even care how real it feels, really. Just, like, give us some feeling. Oh, yeah, the fans are great. He wore the Philly Fanatic headband and shoes. And it was like, that's it. Perfect. Like, he's, you know, showing, like, in some way he's happy to be here. And it never, especially with Simmons, never really, like, you know, I think in his second playoff, they played awful and lost to Brooklyn in the first game of the playoffs. And he was mad that people were booing. And it's like, I don't know, like, how do you react when you spend all that money and go to the game? Like, it's fairly harmless. Like, there's definitely lines that are crossed. There are lines that have been crossed with Simmons. I mean, Tyler Ricky Tynes, I think, tweeted that he saw people, like, trying to, you know, get Ben Simmons to come in the stands and fight them after game 7. Like, okay, obviously people have crossed lines, like, obviously. But there's also, like, in general, the booing, I think, is fine. And it's part of being here. And, like, when you say, like, and we can kind of transition to this, because I want to get your take on it a little bit before we'll talk about it more when Steve's here. But, like, the like, fans need to be better thing, you know, Joel tweeted that. I'm not sure exactly what he meant, if he meant some fans or if he meant the booing in general. But, like, that's part of being here. Like, that's it's not like an I hate you thing. I don't, like, what do you think?
Well, I honestly want to ask, like, Joel, like, how? Like, what specifically do you want fans to be better at? Like, what is your plan? Like, what?
We didn't blow that lead to the Hawks.
How do we get better? We can drive.
I don't even know what you want. I don't know what you want when you say that. That's crazy to me that I love Joel. You can do no wrong in my, but, like, seeing that from him and seeing it from Danny, and it's like, it's 20 players that are like, what are you talking? I don't know what you want. Like, do you want us to cheer when you're, like, blowing these huge leads and, like, underperforming? I don't know what you want. Like,
Danny Green was getting, like, death threats as he won a championship with the Lakers. Like, I'm sorry, we're not that bad.
It's so crazy to me. My laptop is, like, acting up really weird here. Sorry.
Good.
All right, good. It sounded like it was gonna explode. It's like, okay, it's not good. It's so crazy to me that we're hearing that kind of stuff. I just, like, you guys underperformed in a big way, like a huge way, like, not like a small way. Like, it's one thing if, you know, you're making it to the finals and you're making it to game 7 or whatever, you know, and you're doing really well and everyone's, like, really tough on you and saying your season is a failure. Like, I think at that point, that's not true. You know, it's tough. Like, it's hard to win a final, but, like, you underachieved in a massive way. Like you said, and it's such a wasted year too. Such a, like, a big opportunity for them. It, like, last year is not going to happen all the time. You get the one seed and other threats in the NBA aren't as threatening as they're going to be in future seasons. Like, it was a big wasted opportunity that adds to the frustration of itself.
Yeah, it was a bummer. I agree. We've all kind of talked about this, but, like, not that we won't watch because we have to watch. And I could never follow through with not watching because, well, I don't know what I would do with myself, but I don't think I can even fully enjoy this team until really Ben's gone. Because, like, I want to know the guys. I felt this way last year and at the beginning of the season before Harden got traded to Brooklyn, because it was like, who is on the team? Like, is Ben here? Is Ben gone? Are we going to have Harden or are we not going to have Harden? Like, who am I rooting for this season? And now it's not so specific where it's like one guy that we're going after, because obviously, no, Ben's value has plummeted. But, like, is he showing up? If he does, I don't see how I can even root for him when he doesn't want to be here. And then I don't even know, like, we're going to get a big piece back. Most likely, we're going to get, like, a starter, like, at worst, like, a solid starter and picks. Like, that'll be the worst player to get back. That's a huge difference. Like, who am I rooting for on this team? It's a very weird kind of in-between situation, especially like basketball. There's only five guys on the floor at a time. Like, it's not like, you know, if the Eagles made a big signing, it's almost like, you know, and like, it's also just different. Like, you don't feel as close to football players if they have helmets on, all that. Like, it's the thing people always say, but like you're so close up, like you have the close up angles. There's only a few guys out there. Like, it's weird not knowing who the major pieces are going to be. But I guess to wrap up, speaking of that, you know, we've all kind of weighed in on what we like and some possible trade packages. I know Emily and Steve are big on the Spurs young guys, I believe. Okay. What do you think? Is there one you prefer?
I mean, I they just have to get Damian Lillard. Like, that has to happen. Like, it can't not happen. Like, I can't do anything that is – so, honestly, I kind of had a big three, like my own, like, little big board of what I needed this offseason. And there's a big gap after one. Like, they have to get Dame, in my opinion. Like, again, they just have to. But if they didn't, if they couldn't, because it's somehow impossible – I mean, Bradley Beal will be number two. I don't think that's going to happen. Obviously, it sounds like he's not going anywhere. So, but whatever. I'm just saying he's on my list at number two. And then I had Zach LaVine at number three. I'm like, this is the, and I don't think that's going to happen either. It sounds like, I don't think they're, but like, those are the only three guys that I, and even obviously, again, there's big drop offs from one to two to three there. But like, those are the only three things that I find like acceptable, I feel like, from Daryl Morey in terms of like what he needs to do this offseason. And he has to get Dame. Like, you just have to do it. You have to pay whatever. You have to do whatever kind of trades you can do. I feel like it might have to be, you know, the Sixers are trading Ben Simmons to somewhere, like to the Spurs or where the Kings or whatever. And, you know, getting that and somehow maybe turning that into Dame, or it's a three-team trade or a four-team trade or whatever. I don't know. It's not easy. It's not complicated. Or it is complicated to figure out. It's not simple. But I feel like, you know, the Sixers very much have a GM who should be capable of doing that. So I say that as both like a point of confidence that, or hope that it could happen, but also like an expectation that like Daryl Morey, you need to figure this out and get this done, like, because we know you are capable of doing something. So it's not even just about like what they get back in Simmons for me. Like, I almost don't care, because like the bottom line is you need to have Damian Lillard on this team. So you have to get anything you can that somehow gets Damian Lillard on the team. That's all I care about. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, I'm no under illusions that you're going to trade, you know, Ben Simmons to Portland and get Dame Lillard back in return or whatever. Like, it's probably going to have to be, again, more complicated than that. But I just, Dame has to be on the roster. He has to be. Like, it's unacceptable to me if he's not.
Yeah, I've been a big proponent of, you know, kind of a step trade where basically, you know, get the assets you can for Ben, get him out of here and keep your flexibility open. If, you know, Dame, you know, I'm not leaving Portland, at least not yet. So when the at least not yet runs out, if that runs out, maybe before the deadline, put yourself in a good position. Thank you so much for coming on, BLG. We really appreciate it. Love talking Eagles. Obviously, Bleeding Green Nation, we have BGN Radio. Anything else? I mean, people, I think, know where to find you on Twitter. You have so many Twitter followers. I can't imagine that people wouldn't know where to find you if they're Eagles fans. Anything else that we can get out there for you?
That's the main stuff. Definitely looking forward to a Sixers season that does have Damian Lillard on the team. Hopefully. Yeah. That's my positive thought. Willing that into existence. Need that to happen so bad. But I don't want to not watch them. Please, Daryl Morey. Like, don't. I'm going to be so mad. Like, I've made this dumb promise to myself. You know, I feel like I have to follow through. Like, I can't watch them if Simmons is on the team, or maybe, again, even on the roster, but like not showing up. So please just get Simmons out of here. I need it so bad. Even if you can't get Dame, yeah, like, I'm going to be really disappointed. But at the very least, Simmons has to be gone for me to like want to care about the Sixers enough to watch them again. So please really need that. That's not a plug, but that's just a plea.
It's kind of a plug.
I'm just plugging my hopes. You mentioned, you know, BGN and everything. Also doing national NFL coverage on the SB Nation NFL show each week, so people can check that out as we talk about the Eagles, but also more than just the Eagles on that show. But that's basically it.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on again. We'll definitely stay in touch. We'll have to have you back on when, you know, the Eagles are winning the division, maybe. Who knows? So once again, I'm not sure the order we're doing this. So we're either going to a quick ad break here or we're leaving, in which case everyone have a great week. As Steve would say, be safe and be great. See you guys.
Bye.
And I know.